This is an interview in a kitchen with a man I have known, I don't know, for how long, about 4 years, I suspect, in all, from the very beginning, but who is, we're going to assume, I think, Owen Purcell. Can you please tell me something about yourself, but in a particular way? Let's assume that absolutely nobody listening to this knows anything about what you do, except that you make cups of tea for me in your office, and... tell me, bring me up to date on what you're doing in your business.
Okay, well, I have a couple of roles, but the one that I'm here doing today is I'm commissioning editor for New Island Books. They're a publisher of fiction and non-fiction.
I'll have milk.
Fiction and non-fiction, primarily aimed at an Irish audience.
Does that mean they're not for sale outside Ireland?
Oh, no, they're for sale outside of Ireland, but our primary remit is to, I suppose, publish books that Irish people want to read. That's the because, you know, they're our primary print target. That's changing a little bit as the publishing industry changes. But, you know, if I was to be asked, who are you publishing books for, I would say Irish people.
So, and you're a commissioning editor.
I'm commissioning editor, which means... I go through the submissions pile, which, you know, is now electronic rather than print mostly. We still do get some print submissions, and I decide whether something is, you know, good enough to go forward for publication.
And when I met you first?
Yes.
You were commissioning editor?
Mm-hmm.
At another publisher,
yes.
Who my father knew well.
Yes, the one in Cork, Mercia Press.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Who my father did business with for Young's as a bookseller.
I'd say. You were,
right?
Yes.
So, you've moved on from Mercia Press,
indeed.
Right? And you're now, some years later, up in Dublin as opposed to in Cork.
Yes.
Yeah? So
my hometown.
Tell me more. Will we go back into your office?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, the audio will follow
us.
Okay,
great stuff.
Carry on. We're walking down a corridor lined by books. It's a real den here, Warren's den. Okay, I see Harry Clark on the wall. I see Robert Emmett on the wall.
Yeah.
I see New Foundations Ireland, 1660 to 1800. I see a toilet. I see a thing on the wall here that says the Parliament House, Dublin. Are you into engravings?
No, that was actually there all along. I haven't changed the decorations.
But you have De Brock. You have James Joyce.
Yes.
Here, the wonderful De Brock image. Is that yours?
Is
there anything in this office that's yours?
There's a bit in here. Let me see. Well, there's some books that I've published.
Come on, give us a couple.
Okay, so let me see. It's the first one I commissioned, which is Dynasties by Johnny Fallon. Irish Political Families. And it is a survey of, you know, dynasties in Irish politics. Very interesting and very exciting book.
Is it remaindered?
No, God, good Lord, no.
Go on.
And hopefully won't be for many years.
Go on.
Also, another one I published is a memoir, Not Forgotten. Well, it's not a memoir, actually. It's a biography of a very interesting Irish woman's story. It starts in a little bit of pain, but does have a...
Alive? Angela Byrne is alive?
The author is alive, but the story she's telling is that of her great-grand-aunt. So it's from a bit back.
Early 19th century? Early
20th century, yeah. So
same year as my father.
It's an interesting book.
And not happens to be set in Limerick by any chance, no?
Really interesting book that I didn't commission, but was published before I arrived. It's a book called Citizen Dwyer by Sean McCarthy, who's a playwright. But the book is actually a fictionalized account of the life of Michael Dwyer, the Wicklow rebel who fought the British Empire. Well, I suppose the British, the English, they were more rather than the British at the time in the 18th century. He would have been part of the United Irishmen kind of movement. And he ended his days in Australia.
One more. I want to come back to you.
This is an amazing... Actually, you know, I've had very little fiction, but there's a lot
more
fiction
on the
way. Oh, I
love the title. Oh, I love this, folks.
This
Listen
is an amazing
to this.
Book.
What's the name of this book?
This is called Making Love by Tom Inglis, and it's a memoir of his life with his wife who passed away. Her name is Aileen, and she was an artist. And she passed away in 2005 from breast cancer, and he's written a really moving, very powerful, very spare memoir about their time together. And about her death, and it is just one of the most beautiful books I have to say I've ever read. I really think it's a sleeper. We released it in February, and it's still selling, and I think what's happening is people are reading it and recommending it to other people, and they're going in and buying it. So
who came up with the title Making Love?
He was very insistent. It's Tom's idea.
I assume that if you put Making Love into Google, you do not get his book.
No, you do not. No.
So he clearly wasn't a person who was trying to get sales that way.
No, I think he wanted to be true to the book. And to be fair, I think the title is very appropriate if
Making
you get
Love,
a chance to read it. Yeah,
it's a fine
book. And I think it all makes sense. There was a lot of resistance to it, to be honest. It wasn't very popular with the booksellers. And our own sales agents weren't entirely pleased with the name, but Tom asked me to fight for it, and I did, because I thought
well done.
We got away with it, and it seems to be
There will be people who will buy that book for the fact that, you know, divide the world into people who say, I can't have that in my house, the children would see it, well, there's no love in this house.
Well, there's quite a bit of sex in the book, oddly enough.
Excellent.
But that's because it's a very honest, you know, book about their relationship and all the aspects of the relationship.
Now, I tell you what, we have a total of 20 minutes. We don't have to consume it all, right?
Okay.
But just to give us both the discipline of this, come on, back to you,
Owen
Purcell. You're a commissioning editor.
So I'm commissioning editor here at New Ireland.
Yeah.
And I'm also editor of Irish Publishing News, which has been sadly neglected in recent times, so it needs a bit more care and attention than it's getting at the moment.
Is that the fifth day in the week?
Yes, the fifth day in the week. And I'm also, I do a bit of consultancy still for publishers and authors on that fifth day. So, for instance, this Friday I'm giving a talk on social media for publishers. It's a 3-hour seminar, and we'll go through, you know, Facebook and Twitter primarily, but we'll also look to LinkedIn and some other platforms. And I'll really hammer home the basics in terms of websites, blogs, email marketing, that kind of thing, because I think...
Will it be in Dublin?
Yes, it's in Dublin. It's in...
Will it have a hashtag?
It won't have a hashtag, I don't think. It might. I think you're probably going to die, are you? Do we need to plug you in? No.
I'm not going to die.
Okay.
I got 20% battery left.
Okay.
These things, iPhones always look like they're going to die. They give you plenty of advance warning, which I usually miss, but... Carry on. Yeah.
Okay.
So you're speaking. Are you the only person? Is this a one day?
Yeah. It's a half day. It's 3 hours, so it'll be pretty intense. But I hope it gets.
Will there be people there who you can name publicly, or would it be you're very private? Would it be?
It'd probably be fair not to name them until I know whether they're allowed.
But
can I
assume that there will be people of some influence in Irish publishing?
I don't know. I haven't actually looked at the list of attendees yet. So
right.
I'd say I'm not sure it'll be hugely influential. We'll see. Mm. I mean, it is a pretty intense 3 hours, so it may be that they just decide to send somebody who's going to be working on it, you know, fairly frequently.
I'm just thinking of the plight of the person who comes to you on that day, gets incredibly enthusiastic, but they have
they have
zero clout in the food chain, right?
This is true.
And they go back and they get told, oh, look, just put up a Facebook page, any old thing.
Yeah.
You know, people can like us.
Yeah.
But there's no
strategy change.
The thing is grafted on to a traditional...
Yes. Well, to be honest, in the Irish market at the moment, the traditional model still predominates. You know, the print sale is still the most important sale. It generates the most revenue. I mean, we're not even close to a situation where, like in the US right now, probably more than 50% of all books sold, whether they're, you know, ebooks or print books, are sold through online outlets. So what we're saying is, you know, between Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and all the other booksellers online, print books are now much more about the web, and so are ebooks. So when you add those two together, over 50% of all the books bought are now not bought in bookstores.
But bookstores like my family bookstore, I might as well plug it,
O'Mahony's
in Limerick, right? and they have, I think, 3 or 4 bookshops. They are alive and kicking in Ireland?
Yeah, they are, but the question is how much longer they all will be. I think bookstores are very challenged, but not just by kind of digital change, but by changing business practices anyway. I mean, the impact of, say, somebody like the Book Depository in Ireland has been pretty phenomenal. And even, say, things like Kenny's move away from the physical bookstore towards digital.
This is
and
the
then
bookshop
back,
in Galway.
Yeah.
This is the bookshop in Galway.
Yeah. Who now have a...
closed their doors and went online.
Yeah, well, they were online for a long time before they closed their doors, but they're really seem to put the emphasis on their digital or their online sales. Now they do have an actual physical location that you can go to, but it's not in the old kind of Galway city centre location that it used to be. So, I don't think that bookstores will disappear completely, but I do think there's a pretty big restructuring going to happen in the industry.
Okay, let me hold you there because I actually don't so much want to get your ideas as what you do.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Of course.
Right, because the ideas we can come back to another time.
So,
what do you do in your job?
What do I do in my job? Well, the first thing I do is decide what we're going to publish, or decide what I think we should publish, and then try and get everybody in here to agree to publish it. So that's probably the biggest part, you know, the biggest initial hill, because there's a lot of work involved in reading manuscripts, thinking about, is this manuscript good enough? And if it is good enough, how should we publish it to get the best?
Who does the reading? Who does the reading?
I do a lot of the reading. And I would then... So I,
how many books can you read in a day?
Well, it depends what you mean by how many books. I guess when it comes to screening submissions, I certainly wouldn't read the whole submission unless I'm really enjoying it. The reality is that if a book isn't published, it probably hasn't been read in its entirety by the commissioning editor. Because I certainly wouldn't publish anything I hadn't read, but I definitely wouldn't read anything that I wasn't reading for pleasure if I wasn't going to publish it, if you know what I mean. So.
Yeah.
When something gets rejected, it mostly happens very early on. So you'll
but if somebody says to me that they have got golf clubs and they take them out, right?
Yeah.
It takes me about 10 seconds to know whether they're capable of playing golf, and they don't even have to address a golf ball, right?
Why, what
right?
do they have to do?
It, you know, it's just because I know golf.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I reckon that a publishing editor is the same. You can literally. My bet is that within 2 paragraphs.
Well,
you are capable of rejecting 95%
I would say,
of those you're going to reject.
Yes, I'd say that.
You will get
true.
Rid of in the first 2 paragraphs.
Yes. What I have a policy,
of
always giving an author a second chance, which is most authors, regardless of what they think they've written, will bury the lead of a book. They'll bury this thing that should start their book. Whether or not it's the thing that is the primary focus of the first half of their book or not, they'll bury the important thing that should kick off their book within their text somewhere.
Do you know, I've had exactly the same conversation with poets where
yes.
we've said, if you take the last 2 lines of your poem and you put it as the first 2 lines of your poem, then we'll read on.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Because it's in a sense, I think what's going on is writers of books don't tend to learn the lessons that journalists could teach, which is, you know, the pyramid, you know, the inverted pyramid of importance. You know, the first paragraph should contain everything about the story that's important, so that if someone's cutting, they can cut away from the end. But, I mean, obviously a book is slightly different, but it's very important that the lead is still there. So if somebody doesn't, you know, if someone doesn't grab me in the first page, then they're in a bit of trouble, but I'll always skip into the book a bit, maybe 10, 15 pages.
Do you randomly skip into the book?
Yes, because they haven't told me where the lead is, so I'm going to have to give them a chance. So you randomly skip into the book and start a new section and see if you've been gripped at that point. And if you haven't at that point, then you've kind of given them the shot. And maybe if the writing is interesting, but there's no story, you might give it maybe a bit more space to see what's going on. But generally, I find the quality of the writing and the quality of the lead tend to go hand in hand. It's rare that someone is an amazing writer and isn't, you know, gripping you from the very beginning. It's very rare.
That would be a bit like taking a particle of somebody's DNA and discovering that it was a rogue particle.
Yeah.
Okay, so look, where do you do all this reading? I mean, do you read in the back?
I read everywhere. I read absolutely everywhere. So I read in physical print copy here at the desk. I read on my phone when I'm commuting.
What kind of a phone do you have?
I have...
Is that a trade secret, by the way?
No, it's a Samsung Galaxy S2.
Oh, you're an Android guy.
Yeah, I don't think I will be an Android guy for much longer, but I currently am an Android guy. There's a few things about it. I love the phone, but there's a few things about it that I don't like. And they're probably enough to make me move to an iPhone. But on the other hand, I hate the fact that there's no back button on an iPhone. And I love the back button on Android. So I'm not sure. I don't know. I might have to try one of the new Windows phones to see what they're like to use. But yeah.
But basically, you're actually reading mobile.
I read, yeah, mobile.
You're a mobile.
Yeah, and I have a
Kindle.
So
would you say that's what most commissioning editors do today? Read stuff mobile?
No.
Or are you unusual?
There's still a lot of resistance to digital reading. I read a lot on screen, actually. I never even think about that. I read an awful lot on screen, particularly for the submissions that come in by email, which would be at this stage about 90% of submissions. So, and that's great because you're reading really quickly. You can make a decision really quickly. You can jump ahead really easily. You can decide, you know, well, this isn't working, and send an email back straight away. So we're probably a little bit behind on where we should be in terms of responding to submissions.
Who else reads for you then, other than
yourself? There's an editor upstairs, Justin.
Yeah.
He does some reading as well. And then if there's a book where I kind of am intrigued and think there's something there, but I need maybe a bit of somebody else to have a read of it and get their assessment, there'd be a team of readers outside that we can say, listen, here's a manuscript, have a read of it and send me a report. Now, to be honest...
Do you pay them for doing that?
Yeah, it's not a huge amount of money. But
yeah, but still.
God,
if you ever want me to read a book for you...
Happily.
I tend to be
kind of jealous about using readers. I don't use them as much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have a feeling that, I'm commissioning the book.
Absolutely, yeah.
I should be the one to make the decision, because if I don't, then there's kind of a sense that I don't own that decision as much as I should. Which is probably, I don't know if that's...
You know, when you're selecting staff, or in anything, right? Usual step is that you give somebody the job of doing the shortlisting. If you do it properly, you drop a spec, right? So they know, right? Then you say to somebody who only has to be able to follow the spec, right?
Do the
shortlisting for me.
And then I'll make the decision.
Well, of course. I mean, the shortlister doesn't make any decision except that you're in the yes pile or the no pile, right? And the best quality people occasionally dip into the no pile, do a random test to make sure that the person doing the shortlisting
is doing a good
job.
Is
doing it properly, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I could see that being a handy thing if you got over flooded with things.
Yeah, well, I mean, particularly on the electronic submissions, Justin would have a good look through most of them, unless I happen to have a bit of downtime before, and he would put things into a pile which he thinks I might like.
Are you trying to stop people submitting to you or trying to increase people submitting to you? Obviously means this is...
I certainly am stopping people submitting to
me. No, you couldn't say that publicly anyway.
Well, no, but I am.
No,
also,
but,
I am definitely trying to stop people sending me print. I hate print. It's a disastrous way to work in the modern era, you know, for people to send in a print copy of their book. It just makes no sense. And they get lost, regardless of how careful you are. You know, somebody, particularly in my desk, which is not that untidy at the moment, but...
I'll get a photograph of you in your office
to
attach to this.
Yeah, but it definitely is not... I'm not trying to stop people at all.
The only reason I asked that, actually, there's a reason I asked that, because I was wondering that there might be somebody listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
We're down to, I think, the last 50 seconds. Right. No, you have another 45 seconds, so I'm giving you the last shot at what message do you want to put out there.
Okay, well, they can still submit. We're still open for submissions, and the details for submissions are on our website, and they can check it out at newisland.ie.
Great. Owen Purcell, thank you very much
for
this insight into
your
business. It's lovely to meet you again.
Thank you. You too.